Gloria on the air with us, and he joins us again on this Wednesday morning. Dr. Perea, good morning. How you doing?
Good morning, Sandy and Orlando. Great to be with you.
Well, let's start with a quote that jumped out at me after the game on Saturday, not from the Chargers side, but from the Broncos side. And Vic Fangio was asked kind of about the confidence level of his team in a game where the Broncos appeared for 2.5 quarters to play with no confidence, but supreme confidence for the last quarter and a half or so. And what he said basically was that he didn't believe players should lie on the couch in order to play better. You get more confidence when you play better, he said. Do you have any particular reaction to that?
Yeah, I have a lot, Sandy. You know, one of the things I think we undervalue in professional sports and really all levels of sports, high school, college, and pro, is the mental side, the mental preparation of it. And so when you talk about a team like the Broncos this past Sunday, a team of two halves, if you will, one half playing with very little confidence, and then the second half playing with a strong sense of what we call self-efficacy. And self-efficacy is a belief system which is stronger than confidence. But I know a lot of coaches don't use that terminology, but really that's what it is. And I can tell you this, that most NFL teams don't teach self-efficacy. They should, and they will. They will in 20 years from now when enough organizational people infiltrate the NFL and teach them how leadership fosters that. But that's really the difference, Sandy and Orlando, is that the team in the first half was playing football. The team in the second half was cerebrally engaged and mentally engaged in the game and communicating to the body, and the body was playing football. So it's not only just the body. That's what they did in the first half, but they engaged the brain, they engaged the belief system, the self-efficacy in the second half, and that's why those two work together. When you have the above the neck and below the neck working together, those are the supremely confident teams, like the teams in New England who had very average personnel but yet could perform at high levels.
Doc, when I look at just, you know, the win and what has happened since the win, you know, I'm hearing Philip Lindsay talking about the fans, you know, and the fans just that are booing, they just want to be out there. Then I look at kind of like Shelby Harris and his Twitter talking about, you know, where the real Bronco fans at, you know, kind of I see the Broncos retweet something where it said like, good morning, Broncos country, or good morning to the real fans. You guys know who you are, or something like that. You know, what does that say about the maturity level of this team? Because I played football and I never paid attention to what the fans said. And I've always been a believer that fans are there to be entertained. So when you're paying your money, you have the right to boo. You have the right to speak up if you're not being entertained. And, you know, what I look at this team, it's I don't think that people that are booing are necessarily doubters. I look at it as, you know, last year when there was 15,000 no-shows or 20,000 no-shows, that's the doubters. I look at people that are booing in the course of a game as they're frustrated. They're expressing their frustration, but they're at the game, so they're not doubters. So I just want you to kind of elaborate more on that and just give us, you know, from the psychological standpoint, you know, what you think of that as well.
Yeah, you know, Orlando, that's a very good question. The fans are engaged emotionally and psychologically to the point that they are committed. I mean, the financial commitment, the emotional engagement, you know, you're right. You know, I'll tell you, Orlando, one of the things I learned as a rookie, I was an undrafted free agent linebacker back in 83. And I can tell you this, one of the first things I learned is I had one of the veterans pull me aside and he says, you know, the NFL is a business. It's entertainment. It's a sport down the line. And, you know, for a guy coming right out of college, you know, you look at it as a sport. And when he told me it's a business first, it's entertainment second, and it's a sport down the line, it really caught me off guard. But it's really accurate. And so when we think about it, you're right. They're paying money. They're there to be entertained, and they are. But they also feel like they have a right to boo when things aren't going their way. But I can tell you this, the psychological involvement of fans is more based on emotionality than psychology. Psychology is really understanding, you know, the behavior of people, why they do things, the motivation. The emotionality is really brain chemistry, serotonin, dopamine, when that's released in the brain and we act in ways we typically wouldn't. You know, if you were to videotape people at a pro football game, basketball, baseball, you name it, they act differently in that stadium than they do outside of the stadium. And it's largely because of brain chemistry. So I can tell you when teams' fans are booing, it's really based on brain chemistry. It's not a deep commitment. The deep commitment people, the psychologically engaged people that really understand why people behave the way they do. In other words, in this case, you know what? Some players are going to play good sometimes, and sometimes they're not going to play so good. And they understand that and they're accepting of it. That's a psychologically engaged fan versus an emotionally engaged fan is one that is basically acting off of brain chemistry, like I mentioned before.
What do you think, though, of the player reaction? I remember you were with the Broncos in 2015 on a regular basis, a daily basis. You were around the team during games. You were around the team during practice as the week progressed. What would you advise a player if he really is reacting, as Philip Lindsay seemed to suggest this week, that guys play better, he even personalized it, he plays better when the fans are on his side. I remember in 2015, a game here against Kansas City in which the Broncos got booed when the Chiefs blew them out in the middle of a championship season. The fans booed. What would you tell a player about reacting to that one way or another, reacting to the fans?
Yeah. You know, I'll give you a particular example that I used with DeMarcus Ware, and that was we focus on process, not outcome. Like when you hear a fan booing or a fan yelling displeasures at the players or the coaches from the stands or even the referees, you know, that's outcome. And as players, when you focus on outcome, anxiety goes up. When you focus on process, things you can control as a player, your footwork, your technique, your assignments, your gap control, your gap integrity on defense, your blocking assignments, your hand placement as an offensive lineman. Orlando knows that footwork and technique is so vital for an offensive lineman. But all that, Sandy and Orlando, is process. And when you focus on process, anxiety goes down because you know you can control process. You cannot control outcome. You'll never control the fans. You'll never control what they say. You'll never control whether they're psychologically or emotionally engaged. So I would always advise players, focus on process, the things that you can control, because when you focus on that level, your autonomic nervous system will literally be on the parasympathetic, which is the calm side. So And it doesn't matter. The cool thing, Sandy, about the listeners is I don't care if you're a pro football player, a surgeon, an astronaut, a homemaker, you drive a trash truck, whatever you do, if you focus on process daily, your anxiety will generally be lower than it would be if you think about outcome. If you're a real estate agent, don't think about how many houses you got to sell. Think about your communication, the emails, the building of relationships with people, and those houses will start selling themselves. So focus on process.
Right now, visiting with Dr. Rick Pereira. Doc, you saw a couple weeks ago Broncos played against Kansas City, and apparently there was information that came out where, you know, you got on the sidelines, you got Bradley Chubb screaming at the defense. You got Shelby Harris now, you know, lunging at Vic Fangio. And then Shelby issues his statement talking about, obviously, in the game of football, there is a lot of emotion involved. Vic and I spoke, and we are on great terms. Families argue, but we work it out after. All we both want is to win, right? But then you also hear about Drew Locke's comments as far as, you know, there was a lot of talking in the locker room. There was a lot of yelling and screaming and kind of like it was warranted. My question to you is, with a young football team, is this the right approach? Because I look at Shelby Harris as a guy that has a voice in that locker room. I look at Bradley Chubb as a guy that has a voice that a lot of guys look up to in that locker room. You know, and when Shelby lunges at the coach, I think that that could be a sign of a lot of dysfunction, and I think that this team could really start spiraling down because of it, where if you have a lot of older guys on a team, you might be able to get through that, but just when it gets tough again, I just really think that it could create a snowball effect. So I just want to get your comments on that and you know, what you thought of how this team and how they spiraled after that Kansas City game.
Yeah, you know, Orlando, it's really important to understand how leadership impacts performance on an NFL football field on game day and throughout the week. You know, one of the things I think of when I think of Bradley Chubb is he's in a great position to be a leader on this team. And I don't mean just a leader by example. You know, I've heard so many players at times say, hey, I just lead by example, man. I don't talk. I don't rah-rah. I just lead by example. And I say, shame on you. You should lead by example and verbally. And to be a verbal and vocal leader on this team for Chubb, I think, is important. Because if you got a player that's, you know, insubordinating their coach by lunging at them, that is insubordination, by the way. There's a lack of structure. There's a lack of hierarchy when something like that happens. Leadership is cultivated within the locker room. It's cultivated at practice. And there's, you know, we call it the big five when we talk about pro sports. There's transformational, transactional, autocratic, charismatic, and reverent leadership. And it doesn't really matter what kind of leadership the team is deploying, but there's got to be one or two guys, as you mentioned, Orlando, usually guys who are, you know, past their fifth or sixth year in the league that will stand up and lead. You don't necessarily need a person screaming and yelling on the sideline, but you need players who have that verbal and vocal skill of leadership to sit players down and say, look, this is what we need to do. This is what we need to build, that cohesion, the task cohesion, which means everybody does their job, the social cohesion, which means we all like each other, we're attracted to each other, we enjoy playing with each other. You know, I just want the listeners to understand, the great teams in New England, they have the task and social cohesion. And if you think about task cohesion, everybody does their job. And you've heard that before out of Belichick's mouth hundreds of times. But the leadership on this team, Orlando, I think is the thing that the Broncos need to focus on. But unfortunately, there's not a lot of teams that really get outside consultation and help with leadership and understanding how that deploys itself. They make the assumption that just because you're a coach that you know leadership, and that's not true. I've seen it throughout the league in my personal experience in this league that there's football coaches, they know football. They understand football. They understand players, but they don't necessarily understand how leadership is deployed and effective in the organizational context. And we got to get better at that in the NFL.
Talk about reverent leadership, one of those styles of leadership that you just mentioned, because if I'm listening to you run down that list and you get to reverent leadership, Shelby Harris may have been practicing some form of leadership, but it definitely didn't seem to be reverent leadership at that point. What, and you've watched Shelby Harris for a while, and you know he's taken seriously by his teammates. Oh, made the point a couple of minutes ago. Drew Lock may have diffused the situation last week, at least as far as the player-to-player contact was concerned, when he said they have earned the right. Shelby Harris and Bradley Chubb have earned the right to get upset. And he added, if they wanted to come after me that way, I'd listen to it, because it's coming from a place where apparently Drew Lock feels a certain degree of reverence toward a Shelby Harris, even toward a Bradley Chubb. But when Shelby Harris lunges at Vic Fangio, that's not reverent leadership.
Right. You know, I understand what Drew Lock's saying, but as he knows as a quarterback, one of the greatest aspects any player can have is what we call emotional intelligence. We call it EI, emotional intelligence. And what that means is that you got to be able to regulate yourself to be able to deploy information, communicate effectively. When a player lets emotions play a role in performance, they're not a reverent leader. They will not perform to their peak levels. Reverent leadership means that you do by example, but you do it in a way that's very respectful, and it radiates with your teammates. They see you doing things. You're on time. You're very respectful the way you communicate with the coaches. You're respectful the way you communicate with other people. Can you get excited? Absolutely. It's an excitable game. It's an emotional game. But if you're not doing it within the realms of emotional intelligence, you will be on that sympathetic side of the autonomic, and you'll have more anxiety. That's where anxiety is born,
yeah,
on the sympathetic side. So emotional intelligence is essential for quarterbacks, for punters, for kickers. But it's also essential for the other players when they communicate with each other. Because when you let emotions play a role, think about it, listeners. When you're emotional, you communicate differently. You may say words you don't mean, and then 2 hours later you calm down and you come back and you apologize. That's because you are emotionally unintelligent. And really, we can trace it to science, Sandy. Again, it's that autonomic nervous system. And when you're on the parasympathetic side, your thinking is clear. Your communication is clear. When you're on the sympathetic side, your thinking is not clear. You're saying things that you don't mean, and you're saying them out of emotion. So I respect what Drew is saying, but all players, regardless of position, if they have practiced emotional intelligence, their message will be more accurately and well-received, and that will help everyone's performance on the team.
Speaking of performance, the performance of Drew Lock has been very much examined and scrutinized, very much under the microscope this week and even over the last month. We'll ask Rick Perea about Drew Lock coming next.
Broncos Nation loves three things: the Broncos, free Conoco coffee, and flick football. And that love brings things together. So this season, when the Broncos play football, you get free coffee at Conoco. And when you get free coffee at Conoco, you can also play flick football for the chance to meet the Broncos kicker.
That's me, Brandon McManus. This year, Broncos country is also free coffee country. So get ready.
No purchase necessary. While cups last. Visit Conoco.com/promotions for participating sites and promotional details. Copyright Phillips 66 Company. All rights reserved.
Now back to Orlando and Sandy on Sports Radio 104.3 The Fan.
And for a few more moments, Dr. Rick Perea on with us. Orlando?
Hey, Doc. This past week we saw Drew Lock throw for three touchdowns, right? You know, had a great comeback victory. And I just have to go back to look at history whenever that happens, right? And last year, the last time he threw for three touchdowns was against the Houston Texans. You know, it was 22 of 27 that day, 309 yards, three touchdowns, one interception. And that was the best game he played in as a Bronco in the five games that we saw last year. And now this year is another game, right? So another game that he just threw for three touchdowns, was able to get a comeback victory. But I also have to look back at last year, what happened after he threw three touchdowns. And that's when he goes to Kansas City and has arguably the worst year, the worst day of his career. You know, 18 of 40, 208 yards, zero touchdowns, one interception. Then the Broncos scored 3 points that game. So my first question to you is, how do you not allow that to happen this year, where you have such a high 1 week and then such a low the following week? And really, what goes into the makeup of the great quarterbacks, the Tom Brady's, the Aaron Rodgers, the Drew Brees's, the guys that have been playing for so long, what goes into their makeup?
Yeah, that's a fantastic question, Orlando, because you're right. You know, quarterbacks don't change physically from week to week, but they do change emotionally and psychologically, and that's the difference. The great quarterbacks are able to regulate their anxiety. I mean, anxiety is a performance killer. Let's be honest. Too much anxiety puts us on that sympathetic side again. And let's talk about the characteristics just so the listeners understand. On the sympathetic side of that autonomic nervous system, you have muscle tension. Now think about that. Do you want that as a quarterback? Absolutely not. You have narrowing of thinking. Now your thinking is narrow. You're not thinking clearly. You're not processing clearly. Your respiration's up, so your heart rate's up. Your breathing's up. All the things you don't want are happening. So the great quarterbacks have a tool, in their toolbox to help them regulate anxiety. Because, you know, as you said, Orlando, why the difference from week to week? Drew Lock, he's going to be 6'3 from now until he's probably 70 years old, and then he'll start shrinking a bit. His arm's not going to change in the next 4 or 5 years. It'll probably get even a little bit better. What changes from week to week is from the neck up. And that's the thing I really want people to understand. And so for the great ones, they either have outside help, they have inside help within their organization, but we have tools in our practice, in our techniques that we help quarterbacks, punters, kickers, all players regulate. We're doing this more and more for high school teams we see that need this type of regulation, especially now with COVID. So it's the neck up work that is going to be most important for him. And there's physiological tools. There's a biomat he can lay on to regulate the nervous system. There's sound frequency he can listen to, headphones, where he listens to a hertz above 925 hertz that decalcifies the pineal gland of the brain. He can have alpha stim clipped on his ears that stimulates the alpha brain waves that regulates anxiety, depression, and insomnia. They do these. The progressive quarterbacks are doing these things, Orlando, every week. And I can personally tell you what I've done with Ryan Tannehill is done those things. And you see he was the comeback player of the year last year. And I'm not saying it's only because of my tools and techniques, but he's one of those quarterbacks that buys into the what we call psychophysiology. It's above the neck and it's below the neck so that you perform consistently every week.
Hey, I want to bounce something off you here. We're going to listen to Colin Cowherd here in a few seconds, Dr. Perea. He was quoted before the season started, Colin Cowherd from Fox Sports, as saying Drew Lock was going to be the next quarterback to quote-unquote pop. And he added, not to be surprised if the Broncos beat out Kansas City in the AFC West in 2020. But he's changed his tune now, and he is out on Drew Lock because he says Lock tries to be too cool with celebrations and dancing. Let's hear from Cowherd, and we'll get your reaction, Dr. Perea, on the other side.
I'm not into Drew Lock. All the cool dancing. Win more games, Cub Scout. Win more games. If I have to see another one of these, I've seen about four times he's done that. Win games. Okay, you're in a franchise with John Elway. John Elway's shadow is better than you. Don't like it. Out on Drew Lock. How about new rule? Win a Super Bowl before you do that nonsense.
What do you think?
I couldn't agree more. When we were watching the game on Sunday, I said the very thing because I'm like, bro, you haven't earned that yet. You haven't earned that dance and stuff yet. You know, he is a physically gifted athlete. He is a physically gifted player. He can flick his wrist and throw that ball 40 yards downfield. He's gifted, and he knows it. He's a gifted athlete. He's a great basketball player in high school and all that. But you know what? You got to earn it. You got to earn it every day, every week. That kind of stuff is egocentric. And I don't want my players being egocentric. I want them being focused on helping other players get better. We call it self-transcendence. Transcend yourself as a quarterback. Pick other players up. Encourage them. Celebrate by clapping, loving it. You know, whatever, do a backflip or something. But that dancing stuff, haven't earned it yet. So I agree with what I heard.
Doc, when you look at, you know, just the Denver Broncos and what the 2020 season represents, it's all about finding out if Drew Lock is the quarterback. Can he be the face of the franchise for the next 15 years? But my question to you is Kansas City always going to have a one-up on Drew Lock? Are they always going to be in his head? You just look at the history, right? He grew up rooting for this football team. His dad played for Andy Reid. He dated the owner's daughter. Will Drew Lock always make this game bigger in his mind, no matter what? Where now we've seen two games where he's struggled in those two games. So will this always be a recurring issue that we see throughout Drew Lock's career, even if he becomes the guy moving forward for the Denver Broncos for the next 10 or 15 years?
Well, I'll tell you what. It's going to be an issue unless he addresses it. You know, he can purposely address being, you know, regulating his anxiety, getting on that parasympathetic side, if he decides to address that and, you know, understands that that's important to do every week, you know, again, he got the physical gifts. But you know something, Orlando, I want to point out, you know, position coaches are so important at the quarterback position. When I was working with Cleveland and Baker Mayfield had Ken Zampezi, you know, Baker's a kind of a swashbuckling kind of guy. He gets out there, he's got personality, he's got swag. He needed a disciplinarian at that position to say, hey, it's still footwork, it's still technique, let's work on that. He would dial Baker back in enough to get him where he needed to be. Now, they didn't stay together because Hugh Jackson was let go. But I can tell you this, a guy like Drew Locke, and I don't know him personally, but just from watching him, his nonverbals, the dances, all that, he's got a little bit of swag to him too, or at least he thinks he does. He needs a quarterback coach, and I don't know his quarterback coach, but he needs
Mike Shula.
Quarterback coach.
And you don't know Mike Shula that well.
No. But, well, I know him a little bit from Alabama, but he needs a structured, disciplined guy, also as the offensive coordinator, to keep him working on the fundamentals, the footwork, the technique, because that's really what makes quarterbacks great in the long run, not being their buddy or not being their best friend. We saw what happened to the next regime after Hugh in Cleveland, where the owner picked basically Baker's buddy to be the head coach. So you got to have structure. You got to have discipline at that quarterback position coach. And if Drew's got that to a certain extent, they'll get the most out of him. Because I'll tell you what, from the neck down, he's got it going on. He's just got to get it going on from the neck up.
I have a very quick question on COVID because it's come up today. 49ers are the latest team. They play tomorrow night. They shut down their facility today, right? No, receiver. Tested positive. We see the Broncos now throughout their organization, whether it's players, staff, coaching staff, front office, the two most highly ranked officials in the organization, both tested positive this week for coronavirus. You've talked about this before. What's your disposition on all this? Since it seems to be an ongoing story, not a day passes where there isn't a story of some team shutting down its facility or key members of the organization being sidelined.
Well, you know what, Sandy? It's just like running an organization from day to day. There's going to be hiccups and bumps in the road. Now, this is a big hiccup. This is a big bump in the road. But you know what? I know a little bit about San Francisco. I was out there a few weeks ago, and, you know, I can't even go into the facility. I have to go to the team hotel, and then people
right.
come to me.
Right.
But I can tell you this. The teams, the organizations that are run well, the executive vice president, I mean, all the way from the owner, the owners, executive vice president, GMs, how they regulate themselves and really demonstrate that into the coaching staff and the players really is the difference maker. I've seen a couple organizations, quote unquote, freak out and just respond emotionally to these things. And then I've seen a couple organizations handle it in a very professional way. So I think what we really have to understand as an umbrella in the NFL, that remember, it is a business, it is entertainment, and they want to play. So they're going to have their teams out there, but they just got to do their best to manage the players, the coaches, the front office people, so people don't just react emotionally to having a facility shut down. And you know what? You carry yourself in a professional way, and I know that's one thing that Kyle Shanahan preaches in that organization is professionalism. So team by team, they'll have to decide how they do it.